Hello, listeners, and welcome to CMI's Peace Talks. I'm your host, Antti Ämmälä, CMI's Communications Manager. In this show, we look at the world through the lenses of peacemaking. We have conversations with both our own and other top experts on what it takes to build lasting peace in this unstable world situation. In the wise words of our founder, Nobel Peace Laureate Martti Ahtisaari, we believe that all conflicts can be resolved. This podcast is about how to do it. The devastating war in Yemen has already lasted 4 years. Recently, the United Nations said the death toll of the war could soar to nearly 250,000 by the end of this year and call the conflict one of the greatest preventable disasters facing humanity. Still, there has also been a glimmer of hope. In last December, the main conflict parties agreed on a partial ceasefire that could be the first step towards peace. However, the time seems to be running out for the two sides to live up to their commitments. Today we focus on what is now needed to support the fragile peace process. My guest is CMI's Yemen project manager, Silvia Ronvik. Silvia, great to have you here.
Good to be here.
So let's first listen to what Yasser Abdullah Al-Raini, the Yemeni Minister for National Dialogue, had to say about the current situation. I interviewed him recently at the National Dialogues Conference here in Helsinki.
The Yemenis are paying a huge price for this war. It has cost them lives and the economy is in ruins. The United Nations has described this war as the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. Implementing the outcomes of the national dialogue that took place in 2013 and 2014 is the road to lasting peace in Yemen. The conflict is mostly about power and resources. The key question is how to distribute these in a fair way. It was agreed in the national dialogue this is done by changing Yemen into a federal state. This state needs to respect human rights and the rule of law. We also need to empower women and youth so that we can build peace in a successful way. We are very optimistic and the hope for Yemen is still in place. We hope we can come up with a solution that builds the state we are dreaming of.
Silvia, what do you pick up from Mr. Raini's interview?
I think that the minister is pointing to a lot of important issues, particularly in terms of having an inclusive approach to the peace process, including women and youth, etc. And also the fact that he talks about decentralization, which I think is key in Yemen. Also, of course, what he says about the NDC outcomes and the role that that plays in the future of Yemen. But at the same time, I think that given the fact that Yemen has just been through 4 years of war and it still hasn't ended, there's been so many changes in the context that many of the issues that came out during the NDC has to be revisited, particularly when it comes to kind of the southern issue, the Saada issue, and the shape and form of the state and how kind of a federal solution actually should look like. And also a lot more needs to be done on transitional justice. And also the fact that there were so many outcomes from the NDC means that when it comes to actually implementing them, I think a lot of work needs to be done in terms of creating a proper strategy for how to do that and also maybe prioritize a bit within that.
Mm-hmm. We're going to come back to some of these questions later on with you, but let's start with the big picture also. How do you see the cost of war for Yemenis at the moment?
The cost of war in Yemen has been huge. As the minister also mentioned, it's the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Over 24 million people are in need of humanitarian aid, which is basically 2/3 of the population, which is huge. there's been a lot of various figures in terms of what the cost has been in terms of human lives. And UNDP recently released a report where they found that about 230,000 people have actually been killed during the war. 100,000 of those being kind of battle-related deaths, about 130 that has been killed indirectly due to the lack of food and health and infrastructure. So the cost of war has been very, very big.
Mm. Is it fair to say that the situation is getting worse?
It's unfortunately it hasn't gotten any better, you could say, and the fighting continues. It is slowly getting worse. Yes.
Mm. When we look at the background, what are the origins of this war, and who are the main stakeholders?
Well, it's difficult to look at the current conflict without looking a bit further than just kind of the ongoing war, because Yemen has such a long history of conflict. And even before Yemen was united to one country in 1990, there was so many wars between the north and the south. And after it was unified, this was followed by continued wars between the then President Ali Abdullah Saleh and the Houthis. And then leading up towards 2011, where you had the uprising, which was a reaction very much to Ali Abdullah Saleh's efforts of trying to remove the presidential term limits, but also kind of a consequence and a reaction to long-term marginalization of many of the groups. Mm. This uprising led to kind of an escalation of conflict. And then the brokering of a peace deal by the GCC countries, which then outlined a transitional period and the National Dialogue Conference, which we've already talked about. And then in 2014, this process collapsed by the Houthis taking over the capital. And as a response to that, the Saudi-led coalition then intervened in 2015.
Mm.
And that's kind of a bit the background that has led us up to the conflict that we see today. But it's not as clear-cut. And when you actually kind of start looking under the various layers of the conflict, you see that there's so many kind of elements in this war. On one hand, it's clearly a power struggle between the elite and the various political factions on the ground. But there's also elements of kind of long-term frustration and marginalization in the population.
Mm.
Some of the major conflict lines, of course, it kind of includes a Sunni-Shia divide.
Yeah.
And you have forces that are aligned with the Houthis on one side and others that are aligned with the internationally recognized government on the other side.
Mm.
You have the southern separatists. And on top of all that, you have a lot of groups that aren't aligned with any of these groups, but are more kind of characterized by tribal lines and local identities, ideology, and various kind of goals within their own groups. And on top of that, again, mm-hmm. You also have the regional involvement with the Saudi-led coalition, particularly playing a prominent role. Also a heavily armed society. weak institutions, parallel institutions. In reality, now you have two separate states that are functioning or not functioning side by side. Mm-hmm. In addition to heavy poverty and corruption and a lot of kind of local conflicts going on at the same time. So as you understand, it's quite a complex picture that we're dealing with here. Yeah. Mm.
So Yemen is a really a example of these current complex conflicts.
Absolutely.
Where you have international, regional, national and local dimensions. So yeah. A really complex conflict. So in last December, the main conflict parties signed an agreement. Can you walk us through that agreement and
the Stockholm Agreement was, I mean, it was a benchmark in itself in the fact that the parties actually came together for the first time in 4 years. It was very much kind of based on a humanitarian imperative, the fact that the humanitarian needs are so large and there was increasing international pressure on one hand because of the humanitarian situation, but on the other hand also related to the killing of Khashoggi. And the agreement, what actually came out of the talks was an agreement for a truce in Hodeidah, one of the key ports in Yemen, and also for the troops there to redeploy and hand over their weapons to local security forces. And the second part of the agreement had to do with the prisoner exchange. And the third component of the agreement was de-escalation in Taiz and opening of humanitarian corridors. Mm. Since the agreement came in place, there's actually been very little progress in implementing the agreement. Mm. On one hand, the prisoner exchange was the most kind of successful track for a while, you could say, where the parties met on several occasions afterwards to kind of flesh out the details of the lists. But unfortunately, that also kind of stagnated at some point because of disagreement on who should actually be exchanged. Mm. And then Hodeidah, which is probably the part of the agreement that has received most international attention, has struggled with a lot of the ambiguities in the agreement. So the agreement was lacking quite a lot of details. So for example, when the parties agreed that the weapons were to be handed over to the local security forces, It wasn't actually specified who those were. And also it says that it should be guided by the Yemeni law, which also isn't specified in terms of what law are we talking about. So these unclarities has made it very difficult for the parties to implement and also required a lot of work afterwards in terms of actually agreeing on the details of the handover and the truce itself. There has now been an agreement on the first phase of the redeployment. But we're also at a 6 month point after the talks. So you could say that it's gone very, very slowly. And also on the Taiz track, there has been no progress as the parties has not agreed to meet in the coordination mechanism, which was established in Sweden. There is still a lot that needs to be done to kind of ensure a proper implementation of the agreement.
Mm. But one can say that there's a lack of commitment by the parties to live up to this agreement.
Yeah, I think that commitment is a part of it. But I also think that the way the talks kind of took place and the fact that it was a result of pure international pressure where the parties weren't actually allowed sufficient time to really flesh out many of the details that were needed. This is one of the issues. But of course, you could say commitment on one hand, but also there's a complete lack of trust.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot more needs also to be done to kind of build that trust.
So to put it in concrete terms, you mentioned the building of trust. What else can be done in terms of supporting this fragile peace process?
Yeah, I think that given the complexity of the situations, there is a lot of different things that needs to be to happen. But to point at a couple of things. Most importantly, I think that it's important that the parties continue talking to each other, although they're not agreeing to actually have a clear channel of communication where they are talking about the various issues that needs to be solved, which can lead then to kind of an eventual political framework. Because the talks that took place, as I mentioned, in Sweden was very much focused on humanitarian issues. But to really kind of agree on a peace agreement and to move forward and to achieve some sort of peace in Yemen, there needs to be some proper discussions about what are the viable kind of options and solutions for agreeing on kind of the political issues and the real kind of drivers of the conflict. And I think that that's something also that the international community can support with, is to identify some of these options, like what are the various solutions for the critical issues that needs to be tackled, that the parties can actually agree upon. And I think also that we need to look at kind of a more inclusive approach as well. Up until now, the UN has taken very much a binary approach to the conflict and mediating between the Houthis on one side and then the international recognized government on the other side.
Yeah.
But I think that given the complexity of the conflict, you need also to involve the other factions in the conflict, such as the Southerners and the various newly emerging kind of armed groups, and there's so many actors that actually needs to be brought in to ensure a more kind of comprehensive and sustainable peace agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, I think that also it's important to, of course, create some sort of incentives for the parties to continue talking, and also to ensure the buy-in from the civilians. And I think that can, to a large extent, be done through addressing the humanitarian needs and ensuring kind of some sort of economic improvement in the country.
Mm-hmm. Is CMI helping in some of these peacemaking efforts?
Yeah, CMI is heavily involved in these efforts and has done a lot to kind of ensure inclusive platforms where some of these critical national issues can be tackled, and to try to kind of build consensus around these and to identify what are actually some of the options that can be presented to the conflicting parties and the actual solutions to a lot of the issues that are at hand. And we've also worked quite a lot with various women's groups look at how we can ensure greater inclusion and participation of women, not only in the peace process, but kind of in the more broader decision-making processes beyond the actual peace agreement. And also to provide kind of a women's perspective on some of the issues that are at hand, for example, related to the transitional period and how should that actually look like. We have also, we were asked by the UN to support them in implementing the TAES agreement, and we of course still stand ready to support that. And that would be more in terms of supporting any forms of local ceasefire agreements and or opening of humanitarian corridors, or establishing monitoring mechanisms to oversee all this. But of course, this is all kind of pending the will from the parties to actually come together and discuss kind of the details and agree on what de-escalation actually should look like in Taiz.
Yeah. So you mentioned the need to sort of tackle the critical issues to build lasting peace, and CMI is helping in these efforts, helping Yemenis in these efforts. So what are the critical issues? What are the sort of the main drivers of conflict that need to be solved?
Well, I think I mentioned already many of the drivers of the conflict, but I think that if we look at more kind of the long-term issues, it's also there's a vast amount of various issues that needs to be tackled. But I think to point at maybe a couple of things that needs to be focused on in the long term, I think one is the strengthening of state institutions. I think this is key. And finding kind of viable options for how to create security arrangements that are providing security to the people, and maybe looking at kind of alternative solutions for how or what kind of shape that would have, maybe more decentralized structures, linking that again to what I mentioned initially in terms of general decentralization and the federal solution, and kind of ensuring strengthening kind of the local governance and also the local local security arrangements, as I mentioned. And then I think that another key issue is to address the war economy. This is one of the key drivers of conflict at the moment, and the fact that the conflicting parties are actually benefiting greatly from the war. So how do you kind of move away from that and incentivize the actors to work towards peace instead? It's a very difficult issue to tackle, and it's a very political issue as well, but nonetheless I think it's one of the major challenges in the Yemeni conflict. And then also, as I mentioned, looking at how you can kind of improve the overall economic situation of Yemen, which again also goes back to kind of the incentives of the population and the conflicting parties for working towards peace.
Earlier on, you mentioned the results of the national dialogue that took place in 2013 and 14 in Yemen. And many people say that many of these issues that are critical for peace were already met in that national dialogues conference. How do you see this? Is there also already a basis for sustainable peace that can be built on?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the NDC was quite unique in that sense. A lot of Yemenis are quite critical to the NDC and all the flaws that it had. But at the same time, it was unlike anything else that Yemen ever have seen. And it was by far the most inclusive process Yemen ever have engaged in. And it did tackle a wide range of issues, but I think some of the issues, as I mentioned, would have to be revisited because, firstly, because they weren't tackled properly during the NDC, but also because the situation on the ground have changed so much over the past years. So, and you would have to ensure that everyone actually agrees to the actual outcomes as well. So, I think there's a big process as well that needs to be started in revisiting all the outcomes. I think that there is consensus probably around the majority of issues, while others are would need much more work to actually find proper solutions that everyone kind of agrees to.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned some of them already, but particularly related to the SADA issue, to the Southern issue, and to the federal state, and also to start kind of a broader reconciliation process and looking into how to tackling transitional justice in Yemen. But certainly there is a basis there, and the NDC outcomes should be built on, but they can't be implemented in its whole the way it is today, I think.
Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through the Southern and SADA issues? What are the main components of this, this
well,
problem?
It's also linked to a lot of to the federal issue, for example, and the fact that the Houthis didn't get access to the sea, which is one of the major issues.
Yeah.
And also the in the same way that the South was also in disagreement of the shape, the number, and the shape of the federal state, basically. And the Southern issue, of course, has to do with long historical lines of marginalization, as I mentioned initially as well.
Yeah.
On one hand, you have this long history of the Southerners being kind of excluded and marginalized. And at the same time, now there's the Southern groups are even more fractured than they used to be. And particularly with the establishment of the Southern Transitional Council, which is has become kind of a very strong voice for secession. And is kind of technically speaking representing the Southern groups, but doesn't actually have the support of all the various groups in the South. Because in the same time you have the Hadramis who are have their own agenda with the inclusive conference for Hadramaut, and you have the people in Mahra who also have their own interests and agendas. And so a lot needs to be done also in kind of internal dialogue among the various factions of the conflict and those who are kind of technically speaking against the Houthis. They aren't actually united either. So there needs to be kind of further dialogue between the various groups as well. So there's a lot that needs to be done, basically.
Yeah, but you would say that many of the critical questions touch the form of the state, actually. So people agree there should be a federal state, but how many regions and how power and resources are divided among different regions?
Yeah, I think that's one of the key issues, yes.
Yeah. Do you think it can be solved?
Yes. There are ways of solving it. And I just think that people need to really come together with a genuine will to find kind of solutions for the shape of the state and all the other issues that have been mentioned previously. Yes, of course. I mean, there are solutions to all of these issues.
Mm-hmm. Just to sum up, do you remain hopeful? Is there hope for Yemen?
Yes, I think that there is always light at the end of the tunnel. But I think that in this case, it's a long tunnel. But there is definitely hope for a peaceful Yemen one time in the future.
Mm-hmm. And let's hope that CMI can be of some of use for these efforts. Yeah. Thank you very much, Sylvia.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to CMI's Peace Talks with Antti Ämmälä. If you like our show, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your friends. You can also send us feedback and propose topics to discuss via social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or by sending email to comms@cmi.fi.